I'm Mark Golub, and in the news, the Kingdom of Bahrain in the Persian Gulf, one of the first of the Arab nations to make peace with the State of Israel as part of the agreement between the United Arab Emirates and the State of Israel. By the way, Bahrain is the first post-oil economy in the Persian Gulf. As you can see in these photos, it is both beautiful and a very wealthy country, actually an island surrounded by 40 other natural islands and another 51 artificial islands situated between Qatar and the coast of Saudi Arabia. And Bahrain is in the news because it's about to have a new chief rabbi, someone you've seen many times on JBS and someone who's become a dear friend, Rabbi Eli Abadi. Eli is currently the head of the Sephardic Academy of Manhattan and is the director of the Jacob E. Safra Institute of Sephardic Studies at Yeshiva University, where he received his smicha in 1986. Eli Abadi is also co-president of Justice for Jews from Arab Countries, and he was instrumental in passing a congressional resolution dealing with the issue of Middle Eastern refugees. And as if that were not enough, Eli Abadi is also a practicing gastroenterologist. And I'm so pleased to be joined by the new chief rabbi of the Jewish Council of the Emirates, Eli Abadi. Eli, mazal tov on this high honor, one you richly deserve and have earned with a professional career in service to the world Sephardic Jewish community. And as always, I thank you for making time to be with the JBS audience as you prepare, Eli, for a rather dramatic change in your life. But thank you very much.
Mark, thank you again very much for bringing me into your program. It's always a pleasure to be with you, to speak with you, and to answer your questions. I just wanted to stress that the position's official title is Senior Rabbi.
I know it's Senior Rabbi, but I wanted to call you Chief Rabbi. In some of the Jewish Anglo press, it's Chief Rabbi, but I do know that the formal title is Senior Rabbi. So anybody who hears me say Chief can think of Senior. Eli, I want to first remind the JBS audience of some of your extraordinary family background. You actually are a descendant of a very distinguished line of rabbis dating back to the 15th century in Spain. Your family was among those expelled from Spain in 1492. From there, where did your family go, and how did you wind up being born in Beirut, Lebanon, and then growing up in Mexico City?
Well, it took them several hundreds of years from Spain to Provence, and from Provence to Italy, from Italy to Greece, from Greece to Turkey, and somehow they ended up in southern Turkey, northern Syria, the Aleppo Governorate in mid 1800. That's where my grandparents and great-grandparents were born, lived. Even my parents were born there. And right after the partition plan of the 29th of November, 1947, that partitioned what was known as Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state, there were the very famous uprising against the Jewish community throughout the entire Middle East. Aleppo was not spared. For 3 days, the Arab population, unfortunately, rose against the Jewish community. They burned their stores, their synagogues, their Torah scrolls, their businesses. My parents lived right next door to the synagogue, and they saw how they were climbing the wall of the synagogue, entered the synagogue, took out the Torah scrolls and burned them in the backyard. They carried even the chief rabbi out of the synagogue's office into the street, and they dumped him. So that moment, my mother and father took my older siblings, three of them, had to escape from the back door of their home, from what was next to the synagogue, because they were afraid that they would be the next, and they never went back. My parents went to my grandparents' home for a few days, and eventually my mother left to Lebanon. And 2 years later, my father was able to escape to Lebanon, and they settled in Lebanon. So, and I was born there, the last of my family.
I understand. How do you end up in Mexico City?
So what happened is we lived in Lebanon probably for 22 years, my parents tell me. But in the middle of that, I was born. And my oldest siblings looking for a life in the new world, because we all knew, the entire Jewish community knew that unfortunately Lebanon sooner or later will fall. And that's exactly what happened in 1974 with the Civil War. So my older siblings, one of them went to Mexico City, where my father had three sisters and cousins and family, that they have been there since the mid-40s as they escaped Aleppo during those same uprisings against the Jews. He processed our papers. It took him 6 years, from 65 to 71, until the papers were ready, and then we were able to emigrate to Mexico City. Mind you, in Lebanon, we were considered as refugees. They never gave us citizenship because we were refugees. And in Lebanon, unfortunately, the law until today is once a refugee, always a refugee.
Mm-hmm. By the way, can you identify any of the distinguished rabbis who were in your family?
Yes, of course, my own father, Rabbi Abraham Abadi, born in Aleppo. And before him, there was Rabbi Mordechai Abadi, also in Aleppo in the late 1800s. There's also Rabbi Shaul Matlub Abadi, who was in Aleppo and came to Brooklyn and became the rabbi in Brooklyn. This is in the early 1900s. Then there is Rabbi Shlomo Abadi, who was the chief rabbi of Salonique in 1820. And all before that, all the way to Spain.
Well, that is wonderful, Yichas. So you come to the United States to study for the rabbinate at Yeshiva University. It may be obvious, but what prompted you personally to make that decision to leave Mexico City to come to Yeshiva University?
Well, I was educated in the Jewish motto of Torah im Derech Eretz, or Torah studies with secular studies, with general study, or Torah and Melacha, to be a scholar in Torah wisdom and also have a profession. That's basically the modus vivendi, if I could call it that way, of the Sephardic community dating back to the 900, the 10th century Spain, where many of the rabbi and scholars had another profession. Of yeah. course, the most famous one of them is Maimonides, but Nachmanides, also Chasdai ibn Shiprut, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, Abraham ibn Ezra, they all had another profession where they earned a livelihood, and where the rabbinate was not the way to learn their livelihood, was just their passion.
And so
I was educated that way. I wanted to continue my Judaic studies and receive the ordination to continue the tradition of my family and my ancestors. But at the same time, I wanted to be a physician. And in Mexico, to be a physician, I would be forced to attend classes and lab and practice on the Sabbath and Jewish holidays. They did not do the accommodation. And so I was not going to do that. And I discovered Yeshiva University, a beautiful Jewish university that you can be as the famous motto of the army or the navy. And so I decided to come to the United States to pursue my career in medicine and at the same time my vocation as a rabbi.
Okay. That's a wonderful story. You and I have spoken about how the Sephardic community in some way has not received as proper recognition or appreciation from mainstream American Jewish life. Yeshiva University is not a Sephardic Jewish institution. Was there any issue for you about coming to Yeshiva University as somebody out of the Sephardic tradition? You were an observant Jew, but you were observant in the Sephardic minhag. Was there any issue for you coming to Yeshiva University?
Well, there wasn't, and I tell you why. First, because my first encounter with Ashkenazi Jews was actually at the age of 11 when I arrived into Mexico City. Before that, I knew nothing about Ashkenazi Jews in that sense or their customs. But in Mexico City, I attended an Ashkenazi Mizrahi type of a school, and that was my first encounter. And if I could tell you just a very small anecdote, that as I participated in the minyan every day, you know, the Ashkenazi minhag is to say the first verse of the paragraph and the last one, where the Sephardic minhag is to recite the entire paragraph out loud. And so I couldn't understand how could they fulfill their tefillah, in a sense, obligation by just saying one sentence from the beginning of the paragraph and the last sentence. I had no idea that they were saying the middle quietly. And so I asked, I asked the principal. I said, this is a wonderful way of praying. Just one verse on top, one verse on the bottom, and you're done. He said, no, we say everything in the middle. I said, I don't know how he could say it so quickly in less than a minute, finish the entire paragraph. So that was one of them. The second.
By the way, he did not have an answer for that, did he?
No, he did not have an answer for that. But he said, no, but we do say it each one quietly. Later on in life, as I was involved in Jewish research and historical Jewish research, I realized why was that done. Was only kept quiet, I guess, because of the pogroms and the persecution in Europe. They needed to pray on a quiet side than on the loud side. But be that as it may, the second anecdote also of that encounter was that somehow they skipped tachanun, you know, they skipped the confession after the silent meditation. And I also did not understand why. So I went to the principal, him knowing that I was a Sephardi, and he liked me because I spoke Hebrew and he was from Israel. And so we kind of had a good rapport. So I asked him, I said, Rebbe, why is it that they don't say Tachanun? He says, oh, Ashkenazim don't have sins. That's why we don't say Tachanun.
How nice.
Sephardim have sins, so that's why they have to say Tachanun. But of course, he immediately told me it's just a function of time and we need to speed things up.
But I understand. Yes. Those are wonderful anecdotes.
But let me tell you that the Sephardic Studies Program at Yeshiva University was founded in 1964 by Dr. Herbert Dobrinsky, who was the Vice President for Development nowadays, and also by Chacham Dr. Salomon Gaon, who was the Chief Rabbi of the Sephardic community in England. The chief rabbi of the Sephardi community in England. So that was founded in 1964. So when I enrolled at Yeshiva University, I enrolled both in the general Judaic studies of Yeshiva University, but also on the special department of Sephardic studies, which later on, in 2006, I became the director of it, which is the Jacob E. Safra Institute of Sephardic Studies.
What a kick that must have been for you. All right, so Ellie, how do you come to be named Senior Rabbi of the Jewish Council of the Emirates? How does that happen?
Well, I was involved, and I'm still involved with that community for almost 2 years now. A dear friend of mine, Eli Epstein from Scarsdale, who came with me to a trip that I did with Rabbi Lukstein in 2010 to Spain. We really went through the entire Sephardic heritage trip into Spain, visited many of the cities. So Eli Epstein came with me, and from then we struck an incredible friendship, my family and his family. And he has been going to the region for over 30 years as a businessman, and he has established connection. And he told me, Eli, you know, with your Arabic speaking, with your culture, with your background, you have to come with me once at least and see the place and just... I think you'll be a great spokesperson for the Jewish people in that area, and you could bridge, you know, differences. You can make bridges with them. So I traveled there several times.
We're talking about Bahrain?
No, about Dubai and Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
The United Arab Emirates, yes. So I did the first trip like 2 years ago. I met the community. It was during Purim, actually, the holiday of Purim. So I read them the Megillah. We celebrated Purim at that time. I got to know the community. And then also I was able to meet officials of the government and visited the crown. And so I established certain relationship, basically, you know, human to human, yes, with the community and with the general Emirati population.
By the way, I am surprised. I think many American Jews are surprised to learn that there is a Jewish community in these Emirates. You're dealing with a Jewish community in Dubai. Is that what you're telling us?
Well, the majority of the Jewish community is in Dubai, although there are Jews.
There's this sense, you know, that the Arab world, Saudi Arabia and the Emirates, didn't permit Jews to visit or to be there or to set foot on Muslim territory. How was there a Jewish community in any of the Emirates?
Well, you know, the Emirates has had an era of tolerance, cooperation, and coexistence now for many years. And the community there, the nascent community, small group, started in 2010 and then 2013. It only became somehow of an official community in 2018.
Who are they, Ali?
Pardon me?
Who are they? Are they native to the area, or are these Jews who have come into?
No, they're all what they call as expats. They're Jews from all over the world. They're from South Africa, they're from Europe, they're from Morocco, they're from Israel, there is from, all over the world. Jews
How large a community are we talking about here?
It's estimated to be between 600 to 800 people. However, only like 250 have acknowledged that they are Jewish, and they are the ones who have been participated in the community in the last 10 years or so. Of course, it didn't start with 250. It started with much less and has been growing slowly and slowly. Now, with the Abraham Accords, many of them are kind of coming out of the shadow, and the Emiratis have been great host, very hospitable, very welcoming to the community, eager to help and see the community develop and grow and really show the tolerance, the cooperation, and the coexistence that that really reigns in there. As you remember, last year, the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, declared the Year of Tolerance. And they started with the project of the Abrahamic House, a project in Abu Dhabi where it will house a church, a mosque, and a synagogue in a huge campus to showcase that really our ancestor Abraham is what really unites these three religions, and to live in the spirit of coexistence, cooperation, and tolerance.
By the way, are there synagogues or a synagogue in one of these Emirates?
Well, there is the Jewish Council of the Emirates, which is an umbrella organization for all Jews there, no matter what denomination or the Sephardic or Ashkenazi, they're all together. That's a beauty. There is a small Chabad place, which is also under the umbrella of the JCE, and then there's the JCE.
Are you going to be a practicing rabbi?
Of course. That's what I'm going
for. Are you going to be a practicing rabbi in Bahrain, Dubai, or in many of the Emirates?
Well, Bahrain is not officially part of the Emirates.
Correct.
Bahrain is an independent kingdom. The Emirates are really seven Emirates, where Dubai is one of them, Abu Dhabi is another one of them.
So where will you be?
The main seat, I will be in Dubai. But I will be traveling to Abu Dhabi, and I'll be traveling to wherever a Jewish community or a new Jewish community will develop.
Okay. And do you expect ultimately to build synagogues?
Yes, of course. depending on the population, the Jewish population. But I do expect that the population will grow first from the locals who are, as I said, coming out of the shadows as they feel much more comfortable. And also from, I'm sure, not just tourists, but many people that will come from all over the world to do business, and finally they will settle there. And so, yes, I do expect the community to grow and eventually to have many synagogues as needed.
Yes. By the way, everywhere you've gone, Jewish life has flourished. So it's going to be very exciting to watch what you do, whether it's in the Emirates or surrounding Arab countries. Look, Eli, this means a major uprooting of your family. It means leaving the work you've been doing with the Sephardic Academy of Manhattan and the Institute of Sephardic Studies at Yeshiva University. And Eli, it also means closing your medical practice, and you have ongoing patients right now. How do you feel about all this major change, in specifically leaving things you've built here in the New York and American scene? And, you know, how does your wife feel? How does your family feel? Emotionally, what's it been like for you?
Well, as you know me, Mark, I'm a builder. I'm a builder. I'm a person who loves challenges. I'm a person who loves to start things from ground up. And so when I came, and one of them is Chicago was my first synagogue that I founded, actually my second one. My first one was in Bell Harbor. Chicago was the second one. And the city itself, as you know, when I started there, we had less than a quorum of 10 people, of a minyan. And now the community, the Sephardic community, has over 700 families. And we have a main synagogue, we have now a beautiful community center, and we have the beautiful school. So I feel I have done my work here. Everything is on track, going, advancing, and growing. So I feel I've done all my job and all what I can do. And so therefore, this opportunity came, and I felt compelled. I felt excited and thrilled to be able to go there and, in a sense, build something from ground up, because that's the future. That's the future. Of course, be very nostalgic about my friends here in New York, my extended family. But my wife understands it. She's very supportive. She'll be joining me. My children, thank God, they're all adults. And they will be coming and visiting me. And who knows, if they find a profession there that will satisfy them, they probably will move there with me. But I will be coming back and forth maybe every 2 to 3 months. And nowadays, with instant communication, the world has become so small that just instantly you could communicate and see each other.
All right, take one more moment now and describe for me what you think the opportunities that await you are. What are the opportunities you hope will give you avenues for accomplishment in your new position as senior rabbi?
Well, certainly my number one priority is to develop and grow the community. That is my number one priority, and I believe that the ground is very fertile for that. Secondly, I would like to extend that reach to the entire region. Of course, to Bahrain, as yesterday they signed formally the diplomatic relations, to Oman, hopefully, eventually, and eventually to Saudi Arabia when the time is ripe and proper to proceed. So that region is changing significantly for the better. Their relations with Israel and with the Jewish world is pretty warm and warming up even more. And so the opportunities are great. And to be there kind of at the crossroad of history is very important. And those are what I'm going to focus. And of course, maintain the relationship, the bridges, the connection with world Jewry, and see in what way the Jewish community of the Emirates and of the entire region can be helpful and really can contribute to the Jewish world and can contribute to the living in tolerance and acceptance and harmony with our Muslim cousins. Because that community is pivotal now in interreligious dialogue between Jews and Muslims. That is something so, so important for the peace of not just the region, but also of the world.
You know, reflect upon that a little bit more for me. At one point, Ellie, and not so long ago, this would have been unthinkable. And the fact that Arab nations are now making peace with Israel, and that you have an opportunity to become a chief rabbi, basically in the Arab world now, and representing world Jewry. And as you say, I don't doubt for a moment, not only that you'll be successful, but you will build bridges between groups of all kinds, interfaith groups, whether it's Muslim, Christian, Jew, whether it's Arab and Israeli, whether it's, you know, the Emirates and American Jewry. But you agree, not very long ago, this would have been unthinkable. Reflect upon the change that we have lived through in the last couple of years and what that means to you personally.
Well, as a religious man, I can say these are messianic times. As a man living in the modern world, I could say that people change. Time changes. And so, yes, something like that maybe less than 10 years ago would have been unthinkable. But as people change, as time change, as needs change, as realities change, the best way to survive and to really thrive is to change with the time and to realize that those changes are important and good for humanity in general. Being in Dubai and in the Emirates and the entire region is very comfortable for me because it kind of feels at home. Beirut, as you know, was known as the Paris of the Middle East, Lebanon as the Switzerland of the Middle East. And there's no question in my mind that the Emirates could take that title nowadays. Dubai is a very modern city, beautiful skylines, the industry, the technology, science, medicine, agriculture, in every aspect is a very, very advanced emirate. The United Arab Emirates, as a general, could be considered as a Switzerland in that sense. And so I feel very, very, very comfortable, not just from the Arab Middle Eastern customs and tradition that I grew up with, that I was born into, but also as a modern city that I have been a citizen of the modern world. And so for me is a perfect accommodation to be there and live there. Perfect. And really understand the culture, interact with them. I expect to be hitting the ground running, so to speak.
You know, I love you very much. I am so proud of you. There could not be a better choice. I am going to watch and celebrate every success you have. And you've already said you're going to come back often to the United States. When you do, if COVID is over, we'll sit in studio. If not, as you say, communication is now worldwide. We can do this anywhere. You and I will stay in touch, and you'll give me a report on how things are going. But in the meantime, I wish you kol tov v'hatzlacha, every possible success, Ellie. And I'm so happy for you, and I'm happy for World Jewry. You be well.
Thank you so much, Mark. Really, it was a pleasure and an honor to always be with you. And let me extend to you an invitation to come to the Emirates and maybe do your broadcast from there.
Okay. I'm going to take you up on that as soon as I can.
Absolutely.
You be well. Thank
invitation.
You, Ellie.
I can tell it to you from now. It will be a pleasure to have you there okay. with us.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Ellie Abadi, who as the 1st of November will be Senior Rabbi of the Jewish Council of the Emirates. And I know you join me in wishing Ellie good health and every possible success in this new chapter of his life, one where he'll be contributing to the State of Israel and to World Jewry. My thanks as always to our director, Sloan Copeland, Managing Director, Dara Golub, Transmission Manager, John McDevitt, and to the producer of In the News, Carol Lilienthal. Until the next time, I'm Mark Golub. Be well, my friends.